Picture two trains moving in the same direction, each at different speeds. To the passengers on the slower train, it can seem like they're at a dead standstill, unable to detect their parallel movement forward. This was the feeling I had while sitting on my couch in 2001, in between tours, watching Sum 41 on Much Music and the video for their song Pain for Pleasure off their album All Killer, No Filler. I had to pick up my jaw off the floor. And this was because A, Sum 41 had managed to effortlessly poke fun of the heavy metal and glam rock genres in one fell swoop through perfect musical execution and Halloween costume wigs, and B, the singer, one Derek Whibley, was the same kid I used to see around Toronto when I'd go on one of my walks, and he'd be walking with Treble Charger's Greg Norrie. And I had no idea the guy was even in a band until I saw that video. So, imagine my surprise. Back in 2001, we thought we were the shit. We were the only band from our scene touring abroad, and to be honest, I felt pretty proud of what we were doing. Then came Sum 41, and their bullet train sped right past us. Being that they were from Ajax and I was from Scarborough, we were from the same east side of the tracks, and it literally hit home a little more for me. Add to the fact that I had seen Derek randomly everywhere and anywhere throughout 1997 to 1999 when I'd be out and about. Even to this day, no matter where I am, when I see Derek, I can't help but think that's that kid on Yonge Street I used to see just walking around. But with Sum 41, there were other added factors, like the story of how they landed their record deal, which has now become a bit of a an industry legend. It was my old roommate, Richard Switzer, who cut the video that inevitably landed on the right record honcho's desk that played a big part in getting them signed. I remember visiting Richard at his work and seeing these guys looking over his shoulder. At the time, I had no idea what was going on there. When I finally saw the video, it was pretty obvious these guys deserved the record deal and deserved it fast. The final factor was the guy on lead guitar, Dave Brownsound Buksh. It was honestly pretty cool to see a brown guy up there repping and ripping hard up on lead guitar. So my interest in this band was piqued more so than any other band in their genre. Dave left Sum 41 in 2006, but returned by year's end with his own band, Brown Brigade, a metallic goulash that allowed Brown Sound to spread his heavier side a little wider. They had two releases, the EP Appetizer for Destruction, followed by the LP Into the Mouth of Badness in 2007. Both were released on Aquarius Records in Canada, which immediately made us label mates. But it was when we both participated in a Ron Boudreau photo session, along with Billy Talent's Ian Dessaud, did we finally get a chance to meet up and hang out. Even though all three of us were from different corners of heavy music, we all became fast friends. Since then, Dave has kept busy with the Organ Thieves and Black Cat Attack. In 2015, he rejoined Sum 41 full-time after a 9-year absence, and we met up again this past April when we played 4 shows together across Canada, along with Papa Roach, another band we have somewhat of a shared past experience with. Anyways, leading up to these dates, I messaged Dave to ask him to come on the podcast, and we made a date to do it while out on tour together in Calgary, Alberta. Doing podcasts on the road and without my proper gear, I'm often left to whatever the circumstances dictate. And this episode was recorded in our dressing room that had, for some odd reason, the highest ceilings in the venue. So there is a bit of an echo. My apologies in advance for this, but no matter, because this is one great episode with Dave. When it comes to the world of heavy metal, there can be a lot of showboating, bravado, peacocking, and boasting. But nobody, and I mean nobody, will ever be able to top what Dave Brownsound did back in 2003 during the Metallica MTV Icon show, honoring the band Metallica. Sum 41 kicked off the ceremony by playing a medley of Metallica tunes, and Dave delivered a spot-on, note-for-note, Master of Puppets solo right in front of Kirk Hammett himself. Nobody during the taping came close to pulling anything like that off. And for that, Dave has my utmost respect as a guitarist and performer. This episode comes to you with the support of Blue Mike Microphones, Skull Candy Headphones, and Chino Locos Burritos, because theirs are the best. Please leave a rating or a review online. It helps the podcast's profile. And I'm so grateful for all the reviews that have been posted already. All positive, too, so wow. I've said this before. I do this podcast not out of a need to carve out a new vocation for myself, but to simply entertain myself and keep me busy while out on the road. When someone tells me they listen to the podcast, I immediately feel like someone has penetrated my inner thoughts, but I'm very glad that people are listening. Okay, let's get this episode going. Dave Brownsound is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's go-up solo for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes give me in from fucked up. Stop playing. Hey, do. Hey, it's the Danko Jones podcast. You can check us out on iTunes and SoundCloud right now. Right now. Cause it's the Danko Jones podcast. Check us out right now.
There's only one podcast to listen to in this world, and that's the Danko Jones podcast. Listen to the Danko Jones podcast.
When Danko and Henry Rollins talked about Joseph Stalin, I was absolutely mesmerized. And when Ian from Billy Talent took Danko to task, going so far as to call him an asshole, I could hear remorse in Danko's voice. It's a truly touching and emotionally engaging podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready because the Danko Jones podcast starts. No!
All right, Dave, I finally got you here. Yeah. It's been like we've been on tour for 4 days, and I only saw you yesterday.
I know. The first 2 days, it was like everybody was kind of, I guess, gathering their own. We were talking to your sound guy, Corey, and he was like, yeah, guys just flew in from everywhere, and yeah, so. And I heard they've been putting you on the other side of the venue, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was Cone's request.
Yeah. No, it was good, actually. We didn't want to say anything. We were put in the home team dressing room. Yeah. I think it was Dawson Creek, and we were like, this is amazing! Don't tell anyone!
I know, and then today you guys are like in a room filled with guitars. You guys get to see this. It's like pictures of all the country and rock and roll megastars that have played this casino.
Yeah, we are in a casino.
Yeah, so true. Like, come on, man, Kenny Rogers right there.
Yeah.
It's within arm's length.
I know.
So.
We just do these, it's just a conversation, a loose conversation, and the last time we saw each other was years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
Years ago, we did a photo shoot together with Ian DeSaw.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that was the first time we all got to hang out for the day. I thought it was really cool that we all met. I always wanted to meet you, and I didn't know Ian that well at that point, so it was good to touch base with him again and stuff.
But, yeah, because, I mean, as far as fame goes within Canada, we're kind of like the minority trifecta of guitarists, right?
Yeah, the brown guys playing guitar.
Totally.
Yeah. I remember when I saw you guys, when you guys started getting played on Much Music, I'm like, there's another one.
That's great, because I mean, one of the first times I'd heard of you, I was in a band called 747, and my singer, a guy named James, who does dub now for like a Mexican label, crazy, crazy stuff. Really, really cool project.
And he was just like, you got to check out this band, Danko Jones. Start writing some riffs like him. So I was like, all right. So I checked it out. And I was like, oh, my God, this is, like, so rock and roll. So we immediately, like, wrote a song for 747 after listening to you guys.
No way. Yeah, I want to hear that. Absolutely. I want to hear that, man. You got to send me that track.
It's on a tape, and the lyrics are, like, he used to take lyrics from nursery rhymes and stuff like that.
Oh, right.
And nobody really understood his style, you know what I mean? But all of us knew James really well, so, you know, we were like, oh, yeah, man, awesome, awesome, awesome. But it was just like, the song was called, I think it was called Frequency or something like that. I can't remember, but the chorus was like, down by the bay where the watermelons grow.
Right.
But it was a reference to racial tension.
Oh.
And everybody was just like, why the fuck is he saying that? That's like an old nursery rhyme, right? But yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that. And then I told you yesterday that I could have the story wrong, but one of the ways back in the day that you got on Island Records was this infamous EPK.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
That you know, the whole music industry was talking about.
Yeah.
There's this band and they're fucking crazy. And this is like pre-Jackass, pre all that shit, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, to be honest though, I mean, a lot of people were doing it. So we weren't the originators of
it.
But definitely like CKY and stuff like that. They had their own kind of thing going, but
oh, CKY makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course.
Right, yeah.
There's a connection there. But I'd heard about this EPK, this electronic press kit, because my roommate Richard Switzer cut the press kit. So he was telling me about this and he was saying these guys are going to get signed and these kids are like, you know, and I was like, is this how you get signed now? You gotta do this like crate. And then I go, let me see this fucking video.
Yeah.
God damn. So we went to Helios where Richard was working out.
Yeah.
And he showed it to me and I was like, oh, that was fucking hilarious.
Yeah,
at the end, it was fucking, of course you're gonna sign these four guys.
I remember the amount of times we went to go visit Richard. It was like, because he was right at Richmond and Spadina there, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so we'd always go to the Mama's Pizza there too. And I remember directly after that, like, Nori sitting me down and having a conversation just like, hey man, you gotta lose some weight. Right?
Really?
Wait, he was right. He was absolutely right. Like, I was sitting there, like, I couldn't really tie my shoelaces up at the time. So I was like, all right, yeah, you're right. I've been eating Mama's Pizza so many times.
Oh, Switzer, you're the... Well, you know, what's so funny is whenever, you know, your name comes up, Sum 41, I always go, at the time, this is going years before you guys got signed.
Yeah.
I would see, maybe Derek said this too, I would see Derek... it would be me. I didn't have a car. I was dead broke.
Okay, I hear you. Yeah.
So I was going out with my ex-girlfriend, and the only way we can go out is if we walk to wherever we got to go. So we would walk.
Yeah.
And we'd always bump into Greg.
And Dan, and right?
This guy he was always with.
Yeah.
I didn't know who he was. He never said anything. Yeah. Whenever the four of us would be talking, he wouldn't say a word.
Yeah.
It would just be, you know, us talking. And the next thing I see him on TV. I'm like, that guy. And that's how I remember Sum 41. It's like I would see him all over the city with Greg and walking around.
Yeah, I mean they started their relationship early on. I mean, before I was even in the band, I think Greg had played a Supernova show. You remember those? Supernova was like a I forget what they are now, but. They would have the band sell tickets to the shows, rent out venues. Whoever sold the most tickets got the best spot.
Oh,
as far as lineups, dude.
No.
Yeah, it was like a weekly battle of the bands.
Oh, I didn't know. I had no idea about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So like, all of us would take part in these things.
Right.
And Nori and Treble Charger were playing, like, it was like, win a show with Treble Charger. Right. So Sum 41... got their names on that show, and Greg saw them and like picked them up from then on. And then from there it was like that was a good like 9-10 year relationship that we had with Greg.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and that's how I totally, that's Sum 41. I was like, that's that kid, man, who wouldn't say a word.
Yeah.
When we would bump into him on the street.
I know, and he is still to this day, he's a pretty quiet dude, but him and I, we always had this this thing where we just hit it off. Like, first day I met Derek, we were in transportation technology, and I remember, I was so dumb. So I had this idea to start a metal band, and I was like, man, I got this name for a heavy metal band, right? He's like, what? And I'm like, Holocaust. And he's just like, Derek's like, no, man, you shouldn't do that. And I was like, man, I don't know. I think it's the right amount of like,
right?
Like in, I think it's in your face. I think it's kind of like along the lines of like suicidal tendencies. And he's like, no, man, don't do it. Yes. It was almost at the point where I'd like start drawing the logo and he'd just keep on erasing it. Like, no, come up with something else. Yeah.
Right. And now this is before Sum 41 or?
This is before Sum 41. So I was playing in a death metal band in, it would have been 94 when we first met. I was in a death metal band called Embodiment.
Okay.
And then we kind of cross paths every now and then at local shows at a place called the Chameleon Cafe in Ajax.
Okay.
It's now like a tire plant.
So. That's I remember. You guys are from Ajax Pickering.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. So a bunch of us would play this place where it was owned by a family called the Weddigs. And they would let any bands, like no matter what age you were, you could play there and, you know, you could hang out. And it was a good spot.
Isn't that where all those Pickering bands played? Like Mount Havoc and Domestic Violence?
Absolutely, man. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we even had a couple of the bigger bands back in the day, like Mundane, come through and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty rad, man.
Yeah, I do remember that. And that's another thing that I think a lot of people don't really make the connection with you, mm-hmm. being in Sum 41. You're like a metal dude. Even I didn't realize it until, like, what is it? MTV Icon with Metallica.
Yeah.
And then I think that was the first thing I said to you when I first met you.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy, I was watching it, my jaw was, I didn't know, I had no idea. And since then, I realized, oh, you're a fucking full-on metalhead.
Well, yeah, I mean, in all truths, I love heavy metal, and that's where my first riff that I learned on guitar, that's where it's from. But I have a massive background in, like, reggae and funk because of how my parents brought me.
Right.
So, like, I mean, just as much as I love, you know, Persistence of Time, you know, I love Walk, Don't Run by the Ventures, right?
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So it's like,
I see.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, you know, when you're in the punk world of like Sum 41, and also the pop world as well.
Yeah.
It can get frustrating when, you know, it's happened to me when some kid in a Slipknot shirt gives you attitude. I'm like, you motherfucker, I saw fucking Nuclear Assault when you were in your mom's, you know what I mean? Like, fuck you, you know? So yeah. I was still have that thing, like...
Yeah, I mean, it
I'm used fucking to, down.
Yeah.
I'm more down than you, you little shit.
Dude, the punk rock kids used to be the worst for that back in the day. But nowadays, it's like, because we've had some time, and I'm sure you get the same thing, it's like, we've been around for so long as parts of the Canadian music business, it's like, now... I'm getting like gutter punks come up to me in like weird places. So I used to never see gutter punks or mohawks or whatever you want to call them in the mall. But now like I'll have a kid with a mohawk come up to me in the mall and be like, oh, Sum 41, I can't believe it. And I'm like, oh man, we used to get spit on by you dudes. Yeah. Right,
yeah. Yeah. It does come around. It does come around.
Absolutely.
But still, you know, and here's a funny thing that I just remembered the other day leading up to this. You were not in Sum 41 at the time.
Okay.
We were in, it was 2013.
Yeah.
We were at Soundwave in Australia.
Okay.
So Sum 41 was playing.
Yeah.
Billy Talent was playing.
Oh.
And do you hear about this?
No, I haven't heard
Anthrax,
of this.
Metallica, Slayer were all on the bill. So we're all backstage, and I'm talking to Ian from Billy Talent.
Yeah.
And we're like, shooting the shit and blah, blah, blah. Fucking Kerry King comes up to us.
Oh, no way.
Shit. He goes right up to Ian. He goes, yo, what's up? Hey, man. And he walks away. I'm like, holy holy shit, man, do you know Kerry King? He goes, I've never met Kerry King in my life. And then we just did then we're backtracking and we're like, oh shit. You know who he thinks you are, man?
Oh, dude.
And that was, had a laugh.
Ian and I have been like back to back at a baggage claim. And literally at the same time, somebody's come up to Ian and been like, Dave, can I get your autograph? Somebody's come to me and been like, Ian, oh, I love Billy Talent. Can I get your autograph? And we're just, sure. Just sign him up, right?
Ian, right? Yeah,
exactly. So,
oh, that was so funny. Because it was like, it was, because he was, you know, people don't know, Kerry King was in a Sum 41 video.
Yeah,
so it makes sense, you know?
Yeah, man. I, that day was a trip because I remember we get there super early. Kerry King is hanging out already. I don't know what time his call time was, but he was hanging out. He's just like, oh, all right, so you guys gonna have a drink with me? I'm like, yeah, why not? All right. We're expecting, like, I don't know, like moonshine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like moonshine and blood. That's what we're thinking, right? And he's like, I got this stuff called Rumplemintz. We're like, what? Okay, some sort of evil German Jägermeister, let's go for it, right?
Yeah.
It's like mint liqueur, right? And we're like, ooh, this is almost scarier. this is shocking, right? Not to take anything away from Kerry King, but it was like, it was kind of out of left field.
Right.
We're like, holy shit, all right, Kerry King likes Rumplemintz. All right.
Fair enough. I bet he was like, yeah, I just did it to fuck with him, man. Let's see how long the story comes back to me.
I think that dude is so much, he's so whole as a man that it doesn't matter.
Right.
Romance is just, there you go.
Yeah. Okay, well, now that's cool because Kerry King likes it. You know, whatever you're into, dude.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like, there's a few guys like that in metal where it's like, oh, really? Well, then I should like that too, right?
Dude, that was that was Anthrax for me. So I grew up, I remember my first pair of jam shorts was because of a picture of Scott Ian and Charlie Benante sitting at the top of a bowl. Or sorry, it was an interview. And they're being interviewed at a skate bowl. And they're just in jam shorts. And I'm like, that's the coolest look I've ever seen in my life.
That's very familiar. I think you did say that to me when we met. We were talking metal and you said Anthrax is your band.
Yeah, that's definitely like... Out of all the bands, that was the one that my first riff was Cotton Amash.
Right.
So I was like figuring it out, like guitar in my lap, kind of playing like Jeff Healey. My cousin taught me how to hold the guitar and
right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, cool.
Yeah. So yeah, that was
Oh, that's so cool.
Ever since then, it's been Anthrax nonstop.
Wow. Well, when we did that Soundwave Festival, they were on there, and I managed to meet Joey Belladonna. Was so nice to me.
One of the nicest guys. Absolutely.
So nice. Yeah. And Scott was cool to me, too.
Yeah.
I didn't get to meet Charlie. He wasn't on that tour.
Oh, who was drumming for him?
Yeah, they had a sub-in for that whole cycle, almost.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, and even on that, a few months later, we ended up in Woodstock, Poland.
Oh, wow.
With Anthrax and us, and then a whole bunch of other Polish bands. We were the only two, like, Western bands on the bill.
Yeah.
So I ended up in their dressing room talking to them, and Charlie wasn't there either. It was that... Subbing guy. I think I can't remember what band he was in. I can't remember his name.
To do some trivia and find out what happened to Charlie over those years. Yeah.
And it was, I think it was like, what, 20th anniversary or something? They were doing the whole Among the Living thing at that time.
Oh, no way. Yeah. Okay. I know that.
So they just really just went through every song on Among the Living after us.
Yeah.
And it was a great day because that's my favorite Anthrax record.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Yeah, what that's I got, a great one, man.
That's what I got into them.
Yeah.
And then when we did the Volbeat tour, same year.
Yeah.
You know how Rob is now in Volbeat. He was in Anthrax. So every soundcheck, I'd fucking bust into some Anthrax.
Some Anthrax, nice.
And then I come up to Rob. I'm like, hey, you hear that? Did you hear a soundcheck?
Yeah.
And he'd be like, no, man. I didn't hear your soundcheck. Oh, for fuck's sake, man. I played four Anthrax.
Try again tomorrow.
Yeah, I did every day. But yeah, like, I think... they're kind of back on track, I believe.
Yeah, know? Yeah, they're touring heavy. Yeah, I think we play with them a couple times during a festival run this year. So I'm going to go break down the door and.
So you're in with those dudes, right?
I was a while ago, but we've lost touch over the years.
Right.
So I'm going to go break down the door and be like, "Yo, why is no one returning my calls.
That's cool, man. Yeah. I tried to get Scott on the podcast during the Australia run, but it was a tough go. He was pretty busy.
Yeah, I hear you.
And then we did the motorboat together, and still too busy. But
you know, I'm
getting Scott on.
See, I feel like Frank Bello might be the guy. He's the one that might have all the like, kind of sits in the background and sees what goes on. You know what I mean?
I remember I heard this Eddie Trunk interview with him.
Yeah,
he's the funniest out of all of them.
100%, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to sit with Frank. That'd be amazing.
I maybe hung out with Frank once, and it's always brief, right? But yeah, he had me laughing for sure.
Yeah, he seems like a real kind of a funny dude. Like,
yeah. Just,
he was the one with all the zingers during the interview, and all the other guys were like, oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Like, even Scott. Like, I was like,
well,
he must take over, like, in the dressing room or something.
Yeah, like, I walked into their dressing room. They were playing, where was it, John the Bat Center in London with Judas Priest.
Ooh.
And before we got there, like, some guy is just like, hey, Sum 41. I'm like, yeah. He's like, open your hand. And I'm like, okay. And this is like the last time I've ever said yes to open your hand.
Right.
Dude just dumps a pile of weed in my hand. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do with it? I'm like, no, man, it's cool. You can take this. He's like, closes my hand. He's like, that's yours now, right? So I'm like, all right. So I got my free weed in my hand. I forget all about it. I just have my fist clenched because I'm like heading to the Anthrax dressing room.
Right.
I'm like, all right, check my hair, make sure no nose hairs, anything like that, right? Get to the room and I go to shake. Oh, sorry, it was my right hand. So I go to shake somebody's hand. I'm just like, just 1 second. So I go to the band that's like famous. Their quote is like, we don't do drugs, you get our meaning, right?
Yeah.
And just dump a handful of weed in their garbage can.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. Fucking Bello just goes, Canada, eh?
We were label mates once when we were on Aquarius. You were Brown Brigade.
Yeah, that's
remember
right.
That?
That's right. Yeah,
remember that
absolutely,
shit? That,
yeah.
That happened around that same time, right?
Yeah.
So with Brown Brigade, and then I don't know what it was. We were on tour somewhere in Ottawa, and I saw a poster, and the promoter said, yeah, that's Dave's new outfit.
Yeah.
I didn't even know this. So what's going on with you musically now? Like, what do you got going?
So,
you got more going on than some.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a band I've kind of like slipped back almost into like a Gurwitz role with Black Cat Attack.
So, that's the band.
Yeah, absolutely.
We
so,
saw a promo poster for that.
Yeah, it's basically like it's rock and roll. Like if rock and roll, it basically we love Turbo Negro. We love the Misfits, stuff like that. So we all get together. The lyrics are, you know, super, super dorky. Like, everything on the record previous to us was all about horror, science fiction. The last record was, like, you know, One Night on Vampire Beach, stuff like that.
Cool. So, I love that shit. Like, horror punk.
Yeah, absolutely. And every record is based around the fact that we inadvertently, like, saved the world with our music. So we have a skit about it before every record, and
right.
Another kind of alien race is trying to kill us so that we can't save the world again, right?
Right.
So I basically had Brown Brigade folded on one of the worst notes ever. Like, all of us are friends, mm-hmm. but the label Aquarius, we had just gotten offered an opening spot for an Aussie tour across Canada. And they were like, yeah, no, we don't think so. And we were like, okay, all right. So we checked the coffers, couldn't make the tour happen, and yeah, that was how Brown Brigade ended.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty tragic, yeah. So.
Oh, man.
But I mean, you know, Aquarius is a label. They've been around for a while, and, you know, they...
Ah, that's too bad.
They chose what they had to do, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it sucked. It hurt, and like... But I do appreciate the way the failure felt, you know what I mean? Because we all know that like you gotta get knocked down in order to mm-hmm.
to really learn how to live, you know what I mean? And really be thankful for what you have. So I went and I started Organ Thieves, or started playing in Organ Thieves with my buddy Chuck Coles, who is an incredible, incredible musician, great singer-songwriter. He worked with Nori for a little bit, worked on the latest Hunter Valentine record. And he ended up kind of moving more towards an acoustic project, because all of us in Organ Thieves, we were going as hard as we could, but then it just folded somehow. So I was sitting there and I was like, oh man, you know what? Like, I've kind of relied on the Canadian music industry twice now and been let down really hard.
Mm-hmm.
So then Black Hat Attack, I produced two records for them already, and they were looking into getting another guitar player. So I was like, all right, you know what? Like, I'd like to start playing with you guys if that's all right. I know all the songs, I've produced them. And they were like, yeah, we'd love to. So we started, and it was just this amazing, liberating feeling of like just going with nobody's help. So we just released the record, put it out, toured up and down the East Coast of the United States, did like some out of province stuff, and it felt amazing because it was just like, nah, nobody's helped us, nobody's had a hand in what we do. We do exactly what we want, and yeah.
Where is it now?
Right now, we're just about to start recording the new demos for the new record.
Okay.
So, Idraculation was released last year. And then, yeah.
All right.
We try to put out 6 songs every year.
Right. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So
cool.
Nice, short, sweet.
That's nice. Yeah. I mean, that's what a lot of bands are doing, just EPs now.
Yeah.
I noticed that.
It makes sense. I mean, you can concentrate and make 6 bangers, and then that's good, you know, fodder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm old school, though. I got to put out another.
Yeah, album. Yeah, so absolutely. Absolutely,
right.
Man. Yeah.
Like EP. The fuck? Because there was talk of us just doing, let's just put out like 2 EPs and 3 EPs. Why don't we just do 1 album?
Yeah, I heard.
But I see a lot of bands just going that way.
Yeah.
Also because the attention span and the amount of music these days, it's like, just give it to me. Just give me the best and move on.
Exactly.
So yeah.
Exactly.
No, I get it, but I still want a a body of work, you know, body of LPs, you know.
I hear you.
So
I hear you.
Yeah, it's, yeah. I'd love to put out an album every year.
I mean, it'd be awesome too. Yeah,
you know, but it's hard to do that.
Yeah, time is definitely short because touring cycles are longer these days. Like, we definitely got to go out and work our stuff.
Holy shit! I was talking to Tom earlier.
Oh, it's been wild.
9-week tours, like
it's been wild.
And then how long is this one? This is long too, right?
This one, by the end, it's going to be another. So we got
5, 6.
We've had 1 week here. Couple days home, another 5 weeks. It's gonna be about another 9 weeks.
Jeez.
Yeah. Oh, but this one is like we're just letting everybody know that we're back. You know what I mean?
Right.
We got the record. We're working it as hard as we can. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you.
So and I mean the fact of the matter is like the demand is there, so. We're feeling good. We're not like run down or broken or anything like that. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's good that you're back in. I'm like, you know, no offense to the other guys. but you know, now that you're back in Sum 41, I'm like, all right, okay.
Yeah.
No, it feels good. You know, when Brown Brigade was around, I'm like, this is a band I can actually join.
Yeah.
I could join this band.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it would make sense.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, like, it would make sense in the photos.
That's too bad. We would have had you in there in a second. We were looking for a singer for a long, long time.
Oh, fuck. I was like, I'm a whore like that. I always go, hey, man, you need a backup vocal.
Nice.
But that day that you, me, and Ian spent in that photo thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was like, all we need is a drummer.
I know,
what the fuck can we get? We'll get the dude from the Dead Kennedys or something.
I know, Jeez, man.
We could get, and then it'll be a Brown Brigade.
Exactly.
But no, that was really cool.
It was a fun time for sure. Yeah. So, and then I remember it was Cherish from Cherry Colas that did the makeup.
And yeah, stuff, yeah, right. Yeah, that's so, right. Yeah. So that that was no. I remember now. It was like 08.
Yeah, Cherry Cola is another staple of our kind of like our hometown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was, what is it, 8? What is 17 minus 8? Whatever that is?
Yeah.
That's how long
that's
that
nine.
Was.
Nine. Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad it didn't take a decade for us to hang out again.
Yeah, man. That's, yeah. But, you know, we're always like every now and then texting and liking each other's shit.
But I see you on Instagram. Like, yeah, I mean, that's how homebodies work, though. You know what I mean? It'd be like 9 years apart.
It's like whatever. Yeah. I like it's not really because I see where you are. I know where you are, Dave.
Yeah, that's true. I'm creeping you too, dude. Yeah. Don't worry.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you post stuff on Instagram, going, "Yeah, I wonder if Dave's gonna see this," or you know, check it out. You know who you're following.
Sometimes I'll like and I'll be like, "I wonder if this person's gonna see that. I like their stuff.
Check this out, man. Dave.
Let's see. Yeah.
Oh no. I check out everyone. I just, who liked it?
Yeah.
Oh, liked it. There's a lot of downtime.
There is. Especially, I mean, this tour has been, I'm not used to the West Coast schedule, so I am up at like 8 in the morning, just eyes open, like, oh man. Whereas Europe, it was like, I slept like I had like some sort of like, baby sleeping disease, man. It was like I slept till 2 or 3 every day.
I do that too. Yeah, the other night we were all up at 6:30 in the morning, all of us.
Damn.
And we just went into the venue. We're like, what the fuck? Coffee wasn't even up.
Oh man.
Coffee was gonna be up at 7:45. Jeez. So we were all just like circling, like waiting for the pot. It was crazy.
It's like a bunch of coffee sharks. Yeah.
It was like the second day of the tour, wherever that was.
Dawson Creek. Yeah.
Yeah, it was in Dawson Creek.
Yeah, the place that smelled like livestock.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. It was a whiff. I just, a waft of it.
Yeah.
And no horses. I just saw no horses.
I was thinking of the Royal Princess Fair when I smelled livestock.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But man, yeah. So, okay. Tell me the story behind getting this Death Angel jacket.
Yeah, I got this, I think I got it in 08. I've had this for years, because it's nice. Killing Season.
Yeah.
So, it's a Killing Season Death Angel jacket, and it was my most prized possession.
Yeah.
So I kept it. I kept it away from everything. I never wore it. I never touched it.
So wait, what? You're sitting in the sun right now.
I know, it's fucking a shit. Like, but then I finally just said, fuck it, I gotta wear this thing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Come on, so I busted it out just like the last few months.
Oh, man.
Yeah. There so it's like the Killing Season, they did that album at Studio 606, Dave Grohl's studio.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we recorded at Grohl's place for one album.
Oh, no way. What was that like?
Pretty amazing studio. Amazing. Nice. And we recorded with his producer, Nick Raskolnik, who did
absolutely. Yeah.
You must have run into that guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, first day of the production, I walk in with a Death Angel hoodie. Mm-hmm. And he's like, Death Angel, I love Death Angel. Wow, wow. I'm like, okay, great. This is a great way to start the production. We're on a good... And so I just texted one of the Den from Death Angel. I'm like, I'm sitting here in Grohl's studio, and his producer's freaking out over your hoodie.
Yeah.
And then that was it. And then they were like, oh, shit, man. And,
and then that's rad.
Raskolnik produced Killing Season.
That's rad.
So I think it was a cool gesture on the guy's part. They got me this jacket with my name.
Yeah, I don't think those guys realized. Because that jacket, too, it sparked like a conversation between me and Papa Roach's Tech Cowboy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we were just like, oh, man, death metal. And then we started getting into like, it went from Death Angel to like, Heartwork by Carcass, which like...
Oh, that's my favorite Carcass record.
Dude, that record changed my life. Changed my life. Absolutely. I remember I was playing with... I was playing with Embodiment at the time. No, Anatomy. I remember we...
That sounds like a Carcass band. Yeah. A Carcass-inspired band.
I remember we named the band Anatomy because Megadeth had that Anatomy of Vic shirt out.
Oh, I never saw that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we was just like, yeah, we're going to call the band Anatomy. And then the guitar player was a guy named Clint Shingler. Unbelievably technically talented.
Right.
Like, I couldn't believe how good this guy was. And he's like, check this record out.
So I went and I was like, Carcass Heartwork. I was like, oh, cover's kind of weird. Looks like pop. Like, I was, because it was like glossy photo. I was like, oh, give it a shot. Put it in, and just like, it stayed in my CD player for the longest time.
Yeah, and it's a solid record.
Yeah, it got to the point where like, it was one of those records where I owned the CD, the tape.
Whoa.
I had a backup tape in case the CD or the tape went down. It was like, yeah.
I have a Heartwork shirt.
Nice. Yeah, there we go. Sweet.
So we got that. There's a connection there.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, that's, yeah. Like, I even like put a pin over the Danko thing, like, because I was just a little shy. Like, you know, I just didn't.
Really?
Like, yeah. So JC and our band's like, take the pin out, man.
Yeah,
like,
dude.
I'm
no.
Like, all right.
And now you got a pinhole in this nice mint condition jacket.
I know.
Dude.
I know. Oh, but yeah. Man. But yeah. No, it's cool. I think, from what I remember them telling me, they made 8 of them. 5 for the band, 1 for Nick, 1 for me, and 1 for their DJ friend in San Francisco.
Dude, that's incredible.
Yeah, so that's why it was like my most prized possession I had. But now I got to wear it, so I'm wearing it. The weather's right for it, so.
Let's hope there's no like heavy metal theft ring listening to this podcast when it comes out.
I'm putting it away. After. Like, that's it.
Be like, there's Danko. Let's get that 1 of 8.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, that's how people have always said, like, what's your most valuable? This is my most valuable. But yeah, man. So yeah, that's the story of that. Yeah. But anyways, Dave, thanks a lot for being on the podcast, and fucking have a good show tonight.
Thanks for having me. You're a true gentleman as always.
You too, man. Of course.
Wake up every morning just to brush your teeth.